This is podcast number 13 with me, Millard Roper. And today we're going to talk about the Bhagavad Gita. And one of my favorite shlokas in the Bhagavad Gita is 5.18. So chapter 5, text 18. It's amazing because you hear so much about equality and how, you know, we should treat everybody equally and we're all equal. And in one sense, yes, that is a beautiful sentiment and a way to perceive things. But in a broader sense, we're not all equal materially. And this shloka kind of speaks to that very clearly. In one way, materially, somebody might be born genetically predisposed to be much stronger than I and will have a much easier time with going to the gym and lifting heavy weights or singing. I've met singers who are just, they are just born with that voice. And no matter how hard I, and how much I want to be an angelic singer, I will run into a certain problem at a certain point. It doesn't mean that I can't get strong with the weightlifting analogy. And it doesn't mean that I can't become a singer who doesn't, as I like to say, offend people. I used to ask a friend, I'd say, when I was learning how to do the chanting for the kirtan, and I would ask them, hey, is this offensive? Is my singing offending you? And she would be like, eh, kind of. And then one day she kind of heard me chanting, and she chimed in. She goes, hey, it's not offensive anymore. So that I can get my singing there. Practice can bring about amazing, amazing change in how I do things and my skill set. But there is something to be said for the skills that you are born with. So in this shloka of the Gita, you definitely have Krishna explaining this in a more nuanced detail. So let's see what it has to say. So this is 5.18. So it says, the humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, which is like a priest, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. That's pretty intense. He goes there, the dog eater. So the humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. So I always like to look at the Sanskrit because the Sanskrit's pretty interesting because it breaks it down a little bit differently. So the first word you see is vidya vinaya, which is vidya is like kind of like Veda, or it cognates with our word video. Sanskrit and English are very closely related. They come from they're birthed out of what the scholars think is one language, because there's too many similarities, called Indo-European or Proto-Indo-European. And so you have vidya, which is like the educated, and this is by virtue of true knowledge. That's where you see that in the translation. Gentleness, vinaya, and then sampane. Sampane, fully equipped. So you get that sam. Sam is like, you see that word a lot. That means all, usually, like everything. And then Brahmana Gavi Hastini. Hastini is elephant, Gavi is cow, and Brahmana is like a priest. So he's breaking down this comparison. So he's saying, not just a Brahmana, because you can have Brahmanas who are full of themselves, but a humble and learned, someone with vidya, with education, and vinaya, which is gentleness. So you have somebody who's very humble and just the right kind of Brahmana, you know, because you can approach even, you know, all of us have experienced people that are supposed to be holy people in their whatever tradition, and you see them like anger comes up or some real negative emotion, and you're like, whoa, that may not be somebody who I want to kind of like, you know, attach my cart to, you know. So here he's saying, no, it's a priest, but it's like a humble, learned Brahmana. It's beautiful. And then he compares them. So sees with equal vision. So the humble Brahmana, so we'll see with equal vision a cow, a gentle Brahmana, a dog, and a dog eater. And a dog eater. I mean, that's like the lowest of the low. So the last line in Sanskrit is Pandita Samana Darshana. So those who are wise see everyone the same. That's a huge, tall order to do. Like, how can I look at a dog eater the same as a gentle, learned priest? Like, how do we do that? It seems impossible. You know, because clearly there is a difference materially and, you know, emotionally, spiritually, like the whole thing. And one thing that I like in bhakti, the bhakti tradition of yoga, is that part of the opening, like one of the pillars that it rests on, that it's going to teach you, is that there's something called the supersoul, the param atma. Param like paramount, and atma like atma is like soul. Like you have Mahatma Gandhi. Maha is great, atma is soul. So a lot of people think his name was like his mom named him Mahatma Gandhi, and that was like his exalted title that he received. He was a Maha, a great, Maha great, soul, Atma. So Mahatma Gandhi. So in the bhakti tradition, you have an individual Atman, which is your individual soul, and then you have a Param Atma. And the Param Atma is, they call the super soul, which a lot of people would refer to as the divine. It's like the divine spark. Or if you're ever confused and you want a slightly impersonal view of the Paramatma, you can go back to the first Star Wars from, I think it was 77, and you can listen to Obi-Wan Kenobi talk about the Force. And he talks about it because basically he's talking about chi and prana and a life force. And this life force is in every living thing. And this is the Paramatma. So, like my dog is sitting next to me, Bear, and Bear has a Paramatma and an Atma. So he has an individual soul, according to the yogis, and he has a Paramatma inside of that. So, and that is what links us all. And in this way, now, Pandita Sama Darshana. So Pandit, like a pundit, is like a very not a wise person. Sama, there's that Sama again, all. Sama is all. Darshana. Darshana is like seeing. Like seeing something with your eyes, but it's also like a spiritual seeing. Like a lot of times people will go to a temple and they'll say, oh, I want to go take darshan. And darshan means to be seen by the divine. So to be seen by the deity. it's a beautiful thing. So Pandita Samadarshana, so the wise person sees the dog eater, the dog, the cow, and the humble Brahmana all the same. Because of the Paramatma, which is present inside of everybody. So in this way, you can see everyone equally the same, and you don't need to judge them. Or hopefully we start to bring that into our consciousness, that we can catch ourselves. I start arguing with somebody for whatever reason, and I think, okay, this person is getting under my skin for whatever reason. How can I see this person? How can I see it from their side? How can I see it that they're a soul as well? And at the very least, even if they're materially like very different from me, I can know that in deep down that there is a part of their soul, the Paramatma, the super soul, that is divine. And in this way, it connects me to this shloka. So let's see what Prabhupada says in the purport, which is just the explanation of the shloka. The Brahmana and the outcast may be different from the social point of view, or a dog, a cow, an elephant may be different from the point of view of species, but these differences of the body are meaningless from the viewpoint of the learned transcendentalist. This is due to their relationship with the Supreme. So, and this is what I was talking about before with the Paramatma. So it's, we all have this relationship with the Supreme or the Divine because we all have this Paramatma. Oh, here it is. Paramatma is present in everyone's heart. Such as an understanding of the Supreme is real knowledge. Oh, such an understanding of the Supreme is real knowledge. As far as the bodies are concerned in different caste or species of life, the Lord is equally kind to everyone because he treats every living being as a friend, yet maintains himself as Paramatma. So you have this understanding of, and it's tough, man. I mean, here's an exercise, right? Think of somebody who you're arguing with, or somebody who you really don't like, who doesn't like you. And then start to think of them that they have a spark of divinity within them. That can be really hard. That can be a super challenging thing to do, especially when someone triggers you. But even if that becomes the work, imagine if our yoga practice was focused around that rather than some arm balance or handstand. And I'm not saying that handstands and arm balances aren't fun. They're super fun, and they can lead to other types of understandings and like realizations within your physical body, for sure. So I don't want to deny that asana doesn't play a role in our consciousness and our understanding of how to live in this world in a more graceful way. But if I put all of my stock in the handstand or the arm balance, at the end of the day, after a few years, I'm going to move on to something else. If I put my yoga practice as, and I put the focus of my yoga practice on even just this, just trying to see everybody, even if I don't agree with them. It doesn't mean that everybody gets a pass. It just means that I then acknowledge that It's harder, basically, it's harder to demonize somebody. It's harder to condemn them forever and go, you're this, period, end of story. It's done. You're that. I know you're that. And in 10 years from now, I'm still going to say that you are that thing, whatever negative thing that is. Imagine you were judged on the worst thing you ever did for the rest of your life. So, a lot of people, I would say most people, have done something that they could have been arrested for. I'm not saying they were arrested, but they could have been arrested for. And they just weren't. They weren't arrested for it, for whatever reason. And then you have people that were arrested and got caught and, you know, got caught up in that system. And then now their entire life, they always have to check a certain box. And again, I don't think everybody gets a pass. I think we do have to kind of fess up to what we've done in some capacity. But it doesn't mean that you can't grow. I think when you get into your 40s too, or at least 30s, you look back on your 20s and you go, whoa, I've changed. I've definitely changed, hopefully for the better. And then when you look back on your 40s, you look back on your 30s and you say, wow, I've changed. I'm approaching life slightly differently, hopefully for the better. So let's go back to the book and let's see what else he says. So in 519, those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and thus they are already situated in Brahman. So those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity. So sameness, samye, in equanimity. And there's that same samye. So equanimity being, I'm not going to get super panicked if something goes wrong, and I'm not going to get super elated when something goes well. That's hard to do because my life has been programmed to get excited when the things go well and get upset when things go bad. So it's the next shloka really really illustrates that point. So 520, one of my favorites. A person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is unbewildered, and who knows the science of God is already situated in transcendentis. So the first part I really love. The last sentence, for some reason, I can't say. Every time I try and read it, it comes out funny. But a person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant. That's beautiful. So on the back of my business card for Om Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I have a saying from Jigoro Kano. Jigoro Kano is the founder of Judo. And he was an educator, very bright man. And he had this saying that I think goes really well with Jiu-Jitsu, for Jiu-Jitsu. So what he said was, do not let victory enthrall you. Do not let defeat defeat you. When it is safe, do not be careless. When it is dangerous, do not be afraid. So that first part, do not let victory enthrall you. Do not let defeat defeat you. So you have here in the Gita, a person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant. Same thing. They're saying the same thing. Sometimes there's a universal truth that happens, a perennial truth, that every time I hear it, it just sounds right. It sounds ever fresh, and it rings true. Whether it's coming from, you know, the person bagging your groceries, or whether it's coming from the person at the pulpit, you can get behind it. And then when somebody becomes dogmatic in something, you kind of like look back and you go, I don't know, that just doesn't quite feel right to me. That is not ever fresh. That is not a perennial truth. So in this is a perennial truth for me. And I'm also open to the idea that, hey, the perennial truth for me isn't necessarily the perennial truth for you. So this is just something that every time I hear it, it rings true. A person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent. That's beautiful. Sthira buddhi. Sthira is like to stand. Sthira and stand. It's the same cognate, same root word. And buddhi is elegant. Sthira buddhi, to stand in your intelligence. It's beautiful. To be unbewildered, to be unshaken. Right? This person is eligible for liberation. I mean, even if we take out that part about liberation and the science of God and being situated in kind of a transcendental state, let's just dial it back a little bit. Let's say I get like a glimmer of this, of not rejoicing and not lamenting. I'm a little calmer. I'm a little less anxious. To me, that's the practical application. Sometimes in these types of texts, they talk really big. You're going to be liberated from this world. You're going to reach moksha, samadhi. All this, right? It's very, and it's small. It's incremental steps. At least for me, it's incremental steps. And I see a glimmer, and I see, okay, small battle, won it today. If you talk to people who fight professionally. One of my teachers, Ralph Mitchell, he told me this once. He said, me and my friend Ardu, we were talking to him. We were young. We were like 17. And we were talking to him after class one day. And he was telling us stories about, you know, his teachers and, you know, how refined they were with their techniques and things. And we're looking at some pictures of them, and there were pictures of him fighting professionally. And we said, so who's better? You know, Kokoi Kanete, or, you know, this person that did this kung fu style, you know? And he just kind of chuckled. And he said, you know, or maybe we were talking about it in the ring, and we were talking about fighters in the ring. And this was before, not before the UFC, but it was before the UFC like we know it today, where the fighters are very well known. It was, you know, like UFC number 2, and nobody really understood what was going on. And nobody really understood the fighters yet. So we were talking about more fighters in his day, or martial artists of his day. And he said, at a certain level, It's not who's better, because nobody's really like better. It's who's having the better day. Like, you will have an upper echelon of people who are very good at what they do, professionals. But it's who's having the better day at that point, because, you know, anybody could have won. You know, they could have stepped left and they should have stepped right, and it was just a mistake in that moment. And I listened to a podcast with George St. Pierre, and he said the same exact thing. And George St. Pierre is arguably one of the best fighters in the world, or was one of the best fighters in the world. And he said, victory is like an illusion. And this is coming from someone who has won, who has been at the top. At the top. He's been at the top. And he said it's an illusion, because he's lost too. So he could have just as easily lost all those fights that he won. And all those fighters are very good, and not taking anything away from him and his technique and his preparation for those fights. But he's fully aware that, like, it's kind of an illusion, and to hold on to it, to think you're the best, that's only going to set you up for failure. And that's what the shloka is talking about. So say you win the world championship, right? And you're the best fighter in the world at that weight class, at that moment, that day. Okay. Looking at this shloka, a person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant. So let's say you win. You're it. And then the next fight, you come in and you lose. And you were all rejoicing over winning. And you're the champ. And you're the best. And you walk around and you're feeling like you're the toughest thing in the world. And then you lose. And when you lose, you then relinquish that title to yourself, and you go, I am no longer the toughest guy. And now you're going to be really upset. Now imagine you win that title, and you're in full knowledge that where you stand, like George St. Pierre's attitude, I thought was very healthy, where he was kind of looking for equanimity. He's looking to acknowledge, hey man, I could have lost. I didn't, he didn't his last fight, but he could have. And there's an equanimity in that. So this way, if he loses, he's not too wrapped up in it, where he then doesn't acknowledge his own worth, because his worth is wrapped up in this material thing. And on the flip side of that is, when bad things happen to all of us. You also don't attach to them, hopefully. So that's what the shloka is really talking about. And let's see what Prabhupada says about it. The first symptom is that he is not illusioned by the false identification of the body with his true self. So let's just take that analogy of the fighting. If you're not going to attach to the fact that you think that you are the toughest person in the world and nobody can ever, like, if you attach to that, that's the wrong thing. He knows perfectly well he is not this body, but he is the fragmental portion of the Supreme Personality of Divine. He is therefore not joyful in achieving something, nor does he lament in losing anything which is related to the body or material. This steadiness of mind is called stirha buddhi, or self-intelligence. That was the standing in your intelligence. So to understand that you're not the body, you're not the body, you're not the mind, you're something divine. My teacher Raghunath says that all the time. And you can prove to someone very easily. Just take somebody that, you know, has long hair, cut off all their hair. They realize really, I mean, they may be upset, but they're not their body, right? They're not that hair. You can literally cut off limbs and you're still you. Where this gets a little tricky for me and where I question it is, where does the brain come in? Because brain consciousness, where does it reside? We don't know yet. So you can't get a brain transplant. Like you can't transplant. So does consciousness then live in the brain? Because you can get a heart transplant. And there are all these stories, fantastical stories about people that have gotten heart transplants and have felt things. Very interesting podcast on. I started looking into it and it was really interesting on how people definitely feel things. Most people that get heart transplants will feel something of a connection to Asian culture all of a sudden, and then they find out that the heart that they got, they were Asian. You know, I have very interesting things. There's a lot of YouTube stuff out there on it. But for sure, we can't do brain transplants, at least yet. So that part I question sometimes, and I wonder where that fits into this. But definitely the body, I can get a new organ. I can, you know, my arm can get chopped off. It's like you're not the body. You end up, you're pretty much the same person. Even if you lost a limb, you might be depressed for a while. Totally understandable. But after 6 months, they say you kind of bounce back to where you were. Like emotionally, they say that about the lotto too. Like you, people that win the lotto, if they're generally a happy person before they won the lotto and they were super poor, you're generally a happy person after. And if you're generally kind of a jerk before you win the lotto, you're kind of generally a jerk after you win the lotto too. So that's kind of what Prabhupada's getting at here. These shlokas to me are so great and I think needed today, especially in understanding what yoga is, because I feel like there's a deficiency in the yoga world, especially the asana world, in understanding yoga on a deeper level rather than just postures, because the postures are great, but they're only going to lead us so far. I don't know that postures make me a better person, but if I can understand this part and put this into my life, implement this somehow, even on a small level, I don't know. I feel like this is where the genuine gem of yoga comes from. So I'm going to stop there. And if you'd like to support the podcast, I think one of the best things you can do is come down, take a yoga class at the Funky Om. You can also, if you're interested in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, OM Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Both of those things are super great and I think are vehicles to help us understand some of this philosophy. Like Jigoro Kano, the founder of Judo, don't let victory enthrall you, don't let defeat defeat you. That's the same shloka as 520. And you can see that in when you do jiu-jitsu. Because if you go home and you did really great that day and you let the victory really get to you, oh, yeah, I was really great. Then when you come in a few days and you train and you don't do so well, then when you leave, that defeat defeats you because you were so high on the victory that then you're going to be so low on the defeat. And the idea is to get to that equanimity, to get to that even place. So you can just come in and train. Same thing with yoga. It's a little more dramatic in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because you're working with another person. And it's a little heavier. Or a little right in your face. You can't deny it. So my name is Millard and I teach Friday morning at 195 East Main Street. I teach a Hatha Vinyasa class, and then I teach Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Ahita Vinyasa class, and a 4:30 p.m. basic yoga class at 400 West Jericho Turnpike. And then there is always free kirtan on Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Hope to see you there. Bye-bye.